You're listening to the Farmer's Guardian podcast.
Hi, I'm Alex Black.
And I'm Rachel Brown. And welcome to this week's Farmer's Guardian podcast. Alex, we have a fantastic guest this week. We have international rugby referee Nigel Owens, who's obviously now turned to farming.
And who knew there were so many similarities between refereeing rugby and working on the farm?
Who knew, Alex? I found it so funny when he said managing the cattle is much easier than managing the players on the pitch in one sense because they don't answer back. It really was a fascinating chat with Nigel, and it was so nice that we were welcomed onto his farm. He started off by sharing how he actually got into farming in the first place.
Nigel, thank you so much for letting us come onto your farm today.
Pleasure.
Obviously, this is a dream come true for you. Has it lived up to expectations?
Yeah, well, more than I thought, to be honest, because farming has always been in the blood. Like, you know, when I used to go up my uncle and auntie's farm in Pentwyn in Llanon, which is not very far from here, actually, when I was a young kid, summer holidays. And then I used to work on a farm when I left school, on a dairy farm in the Wern farm in Drevach, and then there's a farm behind where I was brought up in Mynecerri called Tirgarn. So I've always wanted farming. Every Saturday morning, that's where I'd be then, up in Tirgarn or up my uncle and aunties, and then when I was older, working in the Wern and Drevach. So it's always been in the blood, really. And then obviously, refereeing took over then for the next sort of 20, 30 years or so. And obviously not a farmer's son, you know, I was brought up in a council estate in Mynecerrig, although my grandparents had a small holding, but only a couple of horses they kept by the time I was a young kid. And obviously to get into farming, you either go into a tenant farm or, you know, if you're not a farmer's son, then you marry into a farm. Well, that wasn't going to happen. So it's a dream come true, really. So when I was 8 years of age, my dream was always I wanted to have a little farm, you know, to be a farmer or a small holding. And then when the refereeing came to an end, I managed to save up over the years and bought a few acres around the house where we're living in Pontyberem still until we move up to the actual farm itself because we're building a new house here. So it's only going to be about, I'd acquired about 28 acres. That's all it's going to be was 28 acres. And I was going to rent a couple of acres up the road to do a hay ledge on. And then keep a sort of small herd, maybe of sort of 10 or 12 pedigree Herefords. But obviously this, the small holding here, which is a 60 acre block itself, came for sale pretty much first refusal, pretty much really. And then bought this. So I've landed up now with a herd of 80 pedigree Herefords and just short of 90 acres. So it really is a dream has come true, but I didn't expect it to be that much, you know. So I'm enjoying it. And it's just the right balance. You know, 80 is, you know, something to do every day, as I'm sure I don't need to tell you. But also as well, it still allows me to do the other work that I do as well. So it's a good balance, really.
And have you had any surprises along the way? Obviously, we all know that farming is an up and down journey. But any surprises along the way that you didn't really expect?
Not really as far as sort of personally doing the farming, because, you know, I used to work on a farm as I left school, when I left school, and obviously at my uncle's farm as well. So I knew what to expect as far as sort of, you know, the work goes, and, you know, the old saying of when you have livestock, you're going to have dead stock, so things can go wrong, you know. But touch wood, we've been quite lucky on that sense of things here, thankfully. So it was what I expected. The only thing that did surprise me, how difficult it is economically wise, you know, for farmers, you know, the pressure of it. I'm very lucky. It's a hobby. It's more than a hobby. They're starting to look after themselves now, the cattle are, you know, to pay for things themselves. But it's been a huge cost to set it all up. So I'm very fortunate, really, that although I want the cattle now to look after themselves and pay for things on the farm, it's not my only source of income. So I don't rely on them. That was the biggest surprise for me, that if I was relying on that to make a living, I just wouldn't be able to do it with a herd of 80 pedigree Herefords, you know, and that's including the calves and everything, and that, not just 80 cattle. So that was the biggest surprise, how much pressure the farmers are under. And because of the pressure of that, and obviously with all the other factors that contribute to that, how much it contributes to the mental health within the farming community as well, that was sort of a surprise for me. You know, although I suffered from mental health myself for different reasons years ago, and knew it was something, you know, that was out there, but how much it really does touch on the farming community as far as the pressure financially, you know, the squeeze on farmers from all directions now, the issues of TB as well, which was something obviously it wasn't about when I was working on the farm at 16 years of age, and now it's something that is around you every day, and the sort of the stress and mental health that contributes. Those probably were the biggest surprises for me, rather than actual, you know, the work that it consisted of, you know.
Obviously, the mental health side of things you're extremely passionate about. As an industry, we do have a poor record of mental health. Things are changing. There are incredible organisations out there that are supporting farmers and the agriculture community, but it still seems that the issue is still there. Mm. And there are still a lot of farmers, particularly the older generation of farmers, that still aren't opening up. And it still is something that's really affecting our industry. What do you think the answer is? And I know that's a really difficult question because there isn't one fixed answer, but how do we kind of make a difference and make a change?
No, you're right. You know, there is no one cap that fits all, for sure. There's a lot of contributing factors that can contribute to it. Ultimately, at the end of the day, it's that self-acceptance as well, and raising awareness around it, which is a lot of these great organisations are doing now. We have some particular excellent ones here in Wales as well, which have been set up, the GGP Foundation. So it's raising awareness, getting the farmers in a macho image where, you know, I'm the man of the house mentality, particularly the older generation, but the younger generation as well.
Yeah.
Of, you know, no, we, you know, we don't talk about those worries. We don't, because it's we know we don't show a sign of weakness. Well, actually, it's not a sign of weakness to open up about your struggles and to ask for help. It's actually a sign of strength. So you have to get farmers or anybody suffers with mental health issues to have that self-acceptance to say, look, I'm struggling here and I need help. So that is key to it. But obviously then, in order to address that, then you have to deal with the factors that sometimes are outside of the individual's control. You know, the financial pressures, the worries, the squeeze that come on farmers. You know, I'm not a dairy farmer, but you know, sometimes you have a huge increase in price of milk and all of a sudden it dropped drastically and people then are struggling and they worry about that. TB is another huge contributing factor to it. There is no doubt. I don't think people realise how much of a stress and mental health issues it causes the farmer in living with, or the fear of having TB. And I've seen it firsthand. I've been very lucky at Touchwood so far. Yeah. I do all I can. You know, biosecurity and diversity and stuff wise as well. But, you know, I when I have a pre-movement test or the annual TB test,
that anxiety is there.
Oh,
definitely.
That anxiety, you lose sleep over it. And it gets you down. Mm. And I haven't had it, you know, man. Imagine if I do have it or.
But even though you haven't had it, it's that constant threat.
It's a constant threat and worry because. Now, look, there is no doubt there's a lot of things being done for the good of fighting TB within the agricultural community, in like dealing with it within the livestock on the farm. But unless you are going to deal with the other contributing factors, which is the wildlife, then you're not going to solve the problem, because you can't solve one problem on the farm. And then there's external factors outside of the farm environment within the wildlife, which can start it all up again. So. But it seems to be people are not prepared to have an honest discussion. No, there are a lot of things that we as farmers can do better about it. You know, when you go back 20, 30, 40 years ago, you took your cattle to the local livestock market. They'd go to a local arbiter, which were all over the place. Now they travel to the other side of the country. People buy cattle from everywhere now. So if you do have TB or it's there, it will travel across the country within the livestock. So there are things that I think we need to address and do better at as farmers ourselves. But then if we deal with that, unless they deal with the issue within the wildlife, then it's just going to be an ongoing problem. So
you mentioned that frustration of not having those wildlife conversations. We had a roundtable hosted on the Welsh border, and that same conversation came up as, we want to be able to have those honest conversations around wildlife. Mm. Obviously, we know that badger call doesn't happen here in Wales.
No.
In England, it is allowed. But farmers are frustrated in Wales that the conversation can't even be brought up.
And that is the problem, because unless you are open to have an honest discussion about everything that contributes to an issue, there's no way you can deal about it or go about dealing with it. And that is because you have to, it's the same as if you're struggling with mental health issues. That's self-acceptance. I'm struggling, what can I do about it? But the problem we have, for whatever various reasons, within government or different departments, there are some people out there who believe that wildlife does not contribute to it. It does, because when you have a farm that is closed herd, never had TB and go down with TB, well, where does that come from? And particularly if they have, you know, the biosecurity is very good as well. So you have to have the conversation. And unless people want to be honest and prepared to listen and have that honest conversation about it, then you're not going to deal with the issue. And when they talk about, you know, animal welfare and which is better or as good in this country than any other country in the world, you know, these people need to come to the farm and see a cow being shot on the farm, and then the farmer has to see the calf die a few seconds later within the cow because she's too close to calving to move away. Now, I believe in England, it's different. I believe in England, you were allowed to calve the cow down. Here in Wales, they don't do that. For whatever reason, I don't know. So I think these people need to come to the farm and see exactly what it's like for the farmer to realise we all are part of the solution. It's not just the farmers, it's just not the people who fight for the wildlife. I'm all for wildlife. Wildlife is hugely important. Wildlife is important to all farmers. But unless you're going to be honest and have an honest conversation about the reality and deal with the both issues that are contributing to TB and the spread of TB, then it's just going to be an endless circle.
Would you say we've almost got a polarised debate right now and people aren't coming together to have constructive discussions?
You have extremisms in both sides of the argument. And when you have extremism, whether it be extreme to the left, extreme to the right, or whatever form of extremism you have, you are not able to have a sensible and honest conversation about it because your views are blinkered. You become too emotionally attached in the subject. When I went out to referee, I couldn't be emotionally attached to a team or a country or players who I, you know, who are maybe good friends of mine, who are the best players in the world. You can't be emotionally attached. You have to go out there and referee the 30 players on the field the same and the two teams the same. Even though if I went to referee, I don't know, New Zealand are playing Portugal in the World Cup. They have never beaten New Zealand. And probably, if we're all honest, there's a very remote chance they go into. And unless they improve over years, and hopefully they can do that. But for everybody watching the game, the romance of that small team, that minnow, upsetting the best team in the world. Maybe not the best team in the world at the moment, but certainly one of the great and the best teams in the world. The romance of all that, everybody watching that as a neutral is going to think, oh, we'd be love to see Portugal winning this. When I'm reffing that game, I can't think like that. So I've got to detach myself emotionally from that romance and referee the game in front of me. And that's the problem you have. There are people out there, no, it's not the wildlife, and they're emotionally attached to that subject, so they're not willing to admit and have a debate about it. And the same goes to the extreme in farmers. When farmers are saying, no, it's not the cattle that spread it, well, unless you have biosecurity in place and follow the guidelines that are there as well, then you're not going to address the issue from the farming point of view as well. So that both sides of the argument need to come together. And until we do that, it's just going to be an endless circle. I had a debate, well, you couldn't really have a conversation with a person about badgers inputting on the loss of habitat of Bellaria, the habitat of hedgehogs. Now, it is not probably the main contributing factor to the loss of hedgehogs. You have loss of habitat in the gardens, and everybody has the people who are all for their wildlife and may not even eat meat, and yet they have a garden or an apartment which has all concrete patio, nothing to do with wildlife there.
Yeah.
So that contributes to a loss of habitat. The traffic on the road contributes to the loss of habitat within hedgehogs. Badgers do occasionally eat hedgehogs. So if you have a million badgers population and they all eat one hedgehog each, that's a million hedgehogs in a year. Now, if that population grows out of control and now you have 10 million badgers, then they're going to be 10 million hedgehogs that they will eat. So they do contribute to it. But unless you're going to sit down and honestly admit, yes, they're not the main reason probably, but they certainly do contribute to it. And when you have a spike in one population of a species, which do occasionally prey on another, then common sense tell you it's going to contribute to the loss. So there's no point you doing things in your garden, trying to make safe places on the road, if there's another factor as well that's contributing. You have to deal with it all. But people won't have that because they are too emotionally attached and they don't see the bigger picture. So there needs to be an honest and frank conversation with both parties and bring people together to deal with this hugely horrific disease when it does affect you as an individual, let alone when it affects the animals as well.
Would you say at the moment, Nigel, there is this disconnect with the general public and society and farmers? You know, there feels a little bit of tension going on at the moment, and almost farmers and the agriculture industry are having to defend themselves quite a lot at the moment.
Yes, because what you have, unfortunately, today in social media is a huge amount of fake information or facts that may be written down because it'll show my point of view. There is another fact that counters that or doesn't show the bigger picture, but I'm not gonna show that. So what you have is people not being honest, and there you have those two extremisms, not having an honest debate because they don't want to show the facts that actually counter arguments the point that they're trying to get across. And you have individuals then, you see things on social media posted about farming. They are from a different country in the world. They've got nothing to do with the farming here in the UK. Now, there are rogue farmers in the UK. There are farmers in the UK whose treatment of their animals, they shouldn't be allowed to be near animals. That goes to the same for people who keep pets. Mm-hmm. That goes to the same for some parents who abuse their children. That is the same in all walks of life. So there are people out there. And then you have then empty vessels, sometimes I call them, who bang on a drum or something that is not accurate information, and then they don't know what it's all about. They don't live in the real world sometimes. So you have people passing comments on the farming or agriculture or the farming way of life, who live in a one-bedroom part in the middle of the city, have never been to the country to know exactly what goes on and what it is like. The guardians of the countryside, who contribute hugely to keeping the countryside safe, encouraging the wildlife in the countryside, looking after the countryside, its biodiversity and everything, are the farmers. Yeah, people don't seem to see that. Now, there are some farmers who undo the good work sometimes, but majority don't. But that's the same for all walks of life. So, yes, and I think what we don't do as an agricultural community, I think we let too many people say what they have to say and not point out the actual good work that's being done. So we need to have a voice ourselves. And there is a platform there for that voice, but we need to show the good things that we need to do. We need to address the things that we can do better as well. So we can bring people to understand a bit more of actually what it is like to be a farmer and how important we are. You know, where do they think in years to come, if there is no land for farming and food, how are you going to feed the people in the world? If they're not careful, in 10, 20 years' time, we are going to be seeing famine all across the world because people won't be producing the food anymore. And when, you know, they talk about cattle grazing the field. Now, I'm not a big fan of these big factory farms myself. Some people say they have their pluses, particularly to produce the amount of food that needs to be produced. Maybe they do, but that's not my cup of tea. So my cattle here, that I don't overstock the land. There's more than enough land here for the cattle I've got, and they contribute to the biodiversity of the countryside. So what people don't understand is when you have cattle grazing the field, when they pass their muck on the field, that attracts the flies, the beetles, the earthworms then that live underneath that. Where do they think the wildlife get their food from? Where do they think the badgers get the worms and stuff which they mostly eat? Where do they get them from? Under that cow's muck. Where do they think the birds that eat the flies, the animals that the mammals that rely on the beetles?
But there's that disconnect. It's educating.
They don't understand this. Mm. So you take away all the cattle from the countryside, you are losing then a huge amount of insects and small little creatures that are important to the food chain. And you take them away, then the food chain will break down. But they don't see this. All they think is the cow in the field is contributing to the hole in the ozone layer. No, it's not. If you overstock and you have billions and billions and billions, it will contribute to it. But when you compare it to the other factors that contribute to it, and then these people, they eat food which is imported from countries in the world where their animal welfare, their human rights is the worst in the world, their contribution to the environment is the worst in the world. Yet they'll gladly eat or wear things imported from these countries, and yet they blame the 20 cows grazing naturally on the field out here. So we need to educate those people. But the problem you have is some of those people, they are so blinkered and emotionally attached in their view that you just can't have that discussion with them. Yeah. And as I said, we all are part of the solution, from the farmers to the person who lives in a one-bedroom flat in London, has no idea about the countryside. We are all part of that solution, and we need to come together and have an honest conversation about it.
It's clear that we can't talk about farming without talking about politics. And right now, Nigel, do you think the Welsh government, UK government, do they understand farming, and are they getting it right? A lot of farmers are criticising right now there isn't that balance. We mentioned about food security and the environment. Are they getting that balance right?
Look, there's a lot of things that the Welsh government here, in particular in Wales, are doing well. A lot of good, genuine people there who are doing what they believe is right to do in all walks of life, whatever they discuss and whatever they feel that they need to do to make life better for everybody concerned. But there are some things that they can do better as well. And I think sometimes some of them are too worried about the votes that they may be getting from people within the big city where the population numbers are, and look after the people living in the city rather than looking after that everybody as they supposed to should be doing. So there are a lot of things that they do well, but I think a lot of things as well, they need to get a better understanding of it. And that is coming to see exactly what the issues are. How can we deal with the issues? I support the planting of trees to contribute to a better and greener environment. But it has to be done in a balanced way. Now, one of the initiatives that they've brought in planting trees is important, and it's a good thing. But when it becomes planting on land that we need for the production of food, then it becomes an issue. And what you have, and they just can't deny it, what they have is big companies outside of Wales, individuals living outside of Wales, buying up a farm and planting trees there to offset their own carbon usage. Somebody who's never been to Wales or never comes to Wales, yet they're able to buy a farm here and plant it all trees. That's not right. That's wrong. So even though I support the planting of trees in the right place and in a balance of it, but there are other things they need to factor in as well. And that's what I believe they haven't thought about, you know, and haven't looked at the bigger picture. So, as I said, there's a lot of things they're doing well, but particularly when it comes from the countryside and the farming community, there's a lot that they need to do better as well, I believe.
Where do you see the future of farming?
It's difficult, but I think we all need to stick together. We need to educate people out of how important farming is. We need to change and do things better as well, which we can and should be doing. And then we obviously need people to have a better understanding of how important farming is. It's just not important for the production of food or all various foods. It's also important in the communities, you know, the farming communities. The communities will die because the farming community is a hugely important part of the countryside community. You know, when the people come from the big cities to the beautiful countryside for their holidays or their trips or their days out, Who do they think looks after the countryside when they go back home? It's the farmers. It's the rural community. And so it is going to be a challenge, but I think, you know, we all need to pull together as a farming community. That's what I think we don't do well enough. I think we don't raise our voices enough, I don't think. And because I think there's come a time where we need to do that. You know, one thing I do envy a bit about the French, for example, you know, when if there's any issues, you know, with the French farmers,
they'll get their voice being heard.
They're out. Yeah, it's protesting. One out, it's all out, you know, and they will get their voice heard and they'll get people to understand how important it is. We don't seem to be doing that enough collectively. You know, we need to come together and be strong in our voices. And, you know, the people who put out the fake information there, we need to stand up to that and counter argument and tell them, no, this is wrong. You know, and that is what, and I think if we can do that and get people to understand that, you know, without the farmers, you won't have any food.
Obviously, you've had an incredible international rugby referee career. In terms of the skills that you had in that role and your skills as the farmer, where is the overlap there?
Well, managing the cattle is much easier than managing the players in one sense, because they don't answer back. The only problem when you have herifers, they're very docile and very quiet.
Yes, I was going to say, yours are lovely.
They get spoilt, yeah. So try and get them through the gate. You can't send them. You've got to get them to follow you. With the players, I had to send them. They wouldn't follow. So it's very similar in one sense, but very different in another as well. I think as a referee, it's a very lonely job. You spend a lot of time on your own, travelling all over the world. Although you have a team of people with you on the field, at the end of the day, you're still on your own refereeing. So it can be quite a lonely job. You know, a lot of time you spend on your own, training and stuff as well.
I didn't think of it like that, but it is very.
It can be. You know, I used to go to New Zealand for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. Now I had a lot of good friends in New Zealand and you'd accompany there, and sometimes you'd have your two assistant referees, a TMO would be with you, but sometimes they'd come from Australia, so they'd fly in a Friday for the game on Saturday, fly back on the Sunday, come back the following. So you spend a lot of time on your own, particularly in night. You go to bed, you're on your own in a country in the world somewhere. And then farming is very similar in that sense. You know, so it can be quite a lonely job, farming, and that's why it's important, I think, you know, that you do have, you know, the market in Carmarthen opened up not very long ago. I went to open it, actually. They have a lovely cafe there. And do you know what surprised me more? And it shouldn't have surprised me, really, how many farmers there were saying, do you know what, I very rarely bring stuff to the market, but it's important that I have somewhere to come to when I see people I don't see from 1 week to the
other. The marts are like...
Yeah, and it's hugely important.
Huge part.
You know, how much it contributes to the well-being of those people.
But we're
losing
those marts, and that's what people are worried about.
We are, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with your high streets. When your high streets are closing down and you haven't got a shop to go to in the morning to get something, you're not going to see people, you know? So farming can be a very, very lonely job. But that is something I was quite used to as a referee. So I was quite used to then in getting that balance. There's always somebody calling you, you know, where we live, although we're in the countryside. Ponteberim is just a mile down the road. So I think it's important then that you do see people and keep in touch with people as well. And, you know, so there's very similarity between the both, really.
What were you more proud of, refereeing the World Cup final or seeing one of your first Hereford calves be born?
Well, do you know, if I hadn't refereed the World Cup final, I probably wouldn't have been able to buy
very
the farm.
True. That's very
so
true.
So they both go in hand in hand. But yeah, look, do you know, I think if you had to give me a choice, you know, where would you rather be now, walking out in that field and among your Herefords in a
really
lovely
special
summer evening, mm-hmm, or on a field in front of 85,000 people booing and shouting at you? I think you
You're
know the answer.
You're not going to get a stick from your Herefords, are you?
I enjoyed my time as a refereeing, and it's given me opportunities which, you know, as I said, I probably wouldn't be able to over the years to save up to have this farm. So I wouldn't change one bit about it. But now, I wouldn't change this. If they told me, Nigel, can you come back and referee the World Cup final in 3 months' time? I say, no, thank you. I'm very happy where I am here.
Perfect. Obviously, you're the president of the National Federation for Young Farmers.
Yeah.
You're hugely proud of that role.
I am, yes.
That ability to get young farmers into farming, you've done a recent survey at the National Federation of Young Farmers, and it said that the biggest barriers are access to land and money to get into farming, and that is what is stopping so many young farmers getting into the industry. Mm. What do you think the answer is?
well, there has to be opportunities there for them to get into farming as well. But I think it's a problem we're seeing all across industries, isn't it? You know, people don't seem to be going into work anymore, you know, into construction, into building, into farming. And probably within the farming community, more so than anything else, there is a sense of duty as well, isn't there? You know, it's generations of farming, and you feel sometimes a reluctant sense of duty. Well, I have to do this. And that probably comes because of the pressure that's on farmers now. We have to make something which is enjoyable, and also something that is rewarding as well. Not just rewarding personally, but rewarding financially as well. That's something you can get into. You know, when you look at some of the, look at the hours the farmers are putting in for something, and you know, you barely have nothing to show for it. Well, that's not going to encourage people to get into it unless they have a feel of sense of duty that I have to do this. There's a duty for me to do this. And that's what we need to change, really. You know, we need to make sure that we make it an industry or a way of life that is rewarding in more way than one, really. And that's, you know, what I think the Young Farmers Movement is doing in contributing in helping to do that, and help because, you know, they have the ear of and the voice of the young people as well. And there's some wonderful initiatives by the NFYFC as well. You know, Caleb, who obviously become very, very famous on the Jeremy Clarkson, who's done a lot of good for farming. Whether you, I wasn't, what was the program he was on before? I never used to watch it.
Top Gear.
So I've never been a sort of Clarkson fan or anti fan because I never really watched Top Gear. And I don't really have any views on him. But all I can say is, you know, that his farming program has highlighted a lot of the issues and done a huge amount of good for the farming
community.
Nigel,
you could do one here.
Yeah.
You could definitely So what initiatives are the National Federation of Young Farmers?
So Caleb Cooper, obviously became very famous on the Jeremy Clarkson. He is judging an initiative and a competition with the NFYFC where they are encouraging the YFC members to put a video together in promoting farming and the food and the produce of the farming as well. And he'll be judging that. And also there's a Young Farmer Achiever Award as well then, which people can take part in. There's a survey and information online about that as well. And all this then will be revealed then in the awards, in the NFYFC awards. So there's a lot of stuff that they are doing as a movement. And as you know, as I said, I'm very proud to be a part of that movement and associated with that movement. But my contribution to it is far less than a lot of other people, you know, who contribute hugely to the success of the YFC. But I've been very fortunate over the years in Llanarthna YFC, giving me the opportunities as a young person, and the opportunities that it gives young people is huge. And not just people within the young farming community as well, but people who are not from a farming community background, like I was really in one sense. Mm-hmm. So it is good to put something back. So I was, you know, an honour to be a YFC president of Wales for about 5 years, back sort of 2009 to about 2013-14, I think it was. And then I've been the last 3 years now of the NFYFC as well. So it's just important to give something back, you know, and if I can do that in any shape or form and help the next generation, as you mentioned earlier, it's hugely important that we get young people to continue coming into farming. But obviously as well, there's a lot I think that, you know, local councils and governments can do as well to help with that, particularly from, you know, tenant farming and stuff as well. It's important because that's the only way that some young people will get into farming, particularly new people. And we need to encourage that, and we need to do more, I think. And that is certainly one area, I think, where the Welsh Government and all governments and communities, we're very lucky. We have a very good sort of council community here in Carmarthen who's very supportive of the countryside. We're very fortunate, but everybody needs to do all they can to help and give those opportunities as well.
You mentioned the success of Jeremy Clarkson's farm, and there seems to be this movement now of people online known as farming influencers trying to spread the message. Would you classify yourself in that? And you know, how does that make you feel? And obviously online, you are open to everyone's comments, whether negative or positive.
Yeah, look, I feel very passionate about Bella.
There from Bella.
I feel very passionate about farming. You know, that's why I got into it, because yes. I was very, very passionate about it. And I see how important it is as well on many different fronts. You know, important it is in maintaining our communities and our countryside, the Welsh language in particular. You know, it's a very stronghold of Welsh-speaking community, the farming community is. The production of food as well, obviously, of course. So I'm very, very passionate about it. And even though I'm very passionate about it, and as I mentioned to you earlier, I also am able to see that there's a lot of things that we need to do better as a farming community, but also I see a lot of wrong information out there from extremisms on the other side as well about the farming community. And that's why, you know, when I see or feel passionate about something, you know, I will stand up for it. I will listen to the other point of view, but, you know, I'm also going to stand up to the people there who spout misinformation out there as well, who are very blinkered in their views. So, and I think it's important that, you know, that we do that, because it's not only a responsibility we have in what we say or what we do. We sometimes have more of a one if we stand by and we say or do nothing. And I certainly am not going to stand by and say and do nothing when I see wrong being done or misinformation being done on whatever side of the conversation it is. You know, I've said to some farmers, look, you're not helping yourself for the things that you can do better here. And unless we accept that and change that area, then, you know, then you can't tell the other people there are things that you are doing wrong here or your misinformation as well. So to me, that's important, I believe.
We talked about the future of farming, but Nigel, where do you see the future of your farm?
Well, where I am here now, and it's not going to go anywhere, and it's not going to get any bigger as well, or otherwise I'd be here 24/7 on it. It is 24/7 farming anyway, but as I said, you know, I didn't go into the farming to be farming to supply the meat market. I bought in some very good bloodlines, and most of my cattle get sold for breeding. A lot of dairy farmers buy Hereford Bulls. It seems to be they're going back into Hereford Bulls now, which is a good thing. So I bought in good bloodlines for breeding. May I do a little bit of showing maybe when I get a bit more, I'll get more time from now on to sort of, you know, to spend with the cattle and prepare them and stuff like that with the help of other people as well. So it's, you know, I love my cattle. I love my way of life here. Some cattle go for meat. I supply a butcher in Cardiff who sells sort of Meirwen, you know, pedigree Hereford meat, but it's, you know, only occasionally do I send something to the meat side of things, because my preference is, you know, for the breeding. But I also understand that it's important as well, you know, because I like meat myself. So occasionally some things go for meat here for various different reasons, but my main aim was to, you know, to get a breeding herd to sell for breeding, but obviously they both go hand in hand for the, you know, for the success of the farm as well. So look, yeah, the herd won't get much bigger than it is now. I bought in various different type of bloodlines. The challenge now is there's probably about 26, 27 different bloodlines here. So I need to reduce that down to probably about sort of 16 or 18, or otherwise I'm just not going to have enough space here. So that's the challenge at the moment, because I do get very attached to them. So I'm going to sell them or send them on.
I was going to say, you probably do get attached. You've got certain favourites.
I suppose I do have favourites, but then they're not treated any different, you know.
Like even
as my refereeing, yeah. Even though that I had a favourite player, maybe, or I always enjoy refereeing or enjoy watch play, I still had to treat him the same or her the same. So there are favourites here, you know. But yeah, they all get treated the same, you know. Even you know, they're not going to get any extra feed because they're a favourite. But there are favourites here for, you know, they mean different things for different reasons, really. Like, you know, like the first heifer that was born here under the Myron prefix, you know, she's a bit of a favourite, so she'll probably always be here now. There's a cow, she's been empty for a year. You know, I've tried to get her back into calf. She's an oldish cow. Well, not that old. So I've given her every chance I can. I'm going to give her one go as well now through the AI again to see. And then obviously if it doesn't work then. But she's had all the chances. So there are little favourites here, yeah. So you do get attached to them, you know, and that's what people don't understand. You know, although, listen, for myself and everybody in the farming community, it is an industry, it is a produce that needs to keep you. But people don't understand. You do get attached to them because you know they are. You know you get attached to them. It's what gives you a living. And whilst they are here, they are loved and they are cared for. And you know they've had a good life whilst they are here. But that is farming. That is the reality of it, really. So yeah, I do get attached, but also I know what I was letting myself into, having worked in the farm. So you know you know what has to happen sometimes. But I get quite upset when something happens. We've been very lucky, really. What are we out of about sort of 65 calves born, you know, in the last sort of 3 or 4 years? We've only lost two, and that was because there was nothing I could do. There's cameras in the shed. When there's calving, I'm always there, you know, just in case I need to step in, or Barry will be, my partner will be, if I'm not here. So we do all we can to keep things alive, but sometimes you just lose and lost two. There was nothing, they were already, nothing we could do about that, you know, but it still upsets you, you know, you're still getting disappointed and upset, and people don't see that, you know, it's...
Up all hours,
yeah, and you know, you care for them and look after them and stuff, so yeah, and that's what I think people sometimes need to understand, you know, it's just not a commodity where you're keeping and you don't care about, you know, you care about these animals. And you get, you know, very upset when things happen, particularly around sort of the issues of TB, you know, when, you know, you lose some of your animals and stuff like that. So people don't understand that. And that's where I think we need to educate people. And getting, you know, there are some programs out there now which, you know, encourage people to come to a farm and see exactly what it is like. Yes. Well, if you are going to comment on something, come and see what it's like first and then pass your comment or make a judgment, you know.
Are you ever tempted to go back to your roots, back to... bit of milking?
I used to love milking. When I used to work on the Wern farm in Drevach, I used to love milking, you know, not much interest in the machinery. Yeah. You know, I enjoy the rolling and the chain narrowing, and I do everything here myself except the tedding, so except the rowing and the baling. I do everything else myself. But yeah, no, the animals are my preference. So no, I used to love it. It was, I don't know, there's something special about in the summer now, in the sort of early morning or in the evening, you're walking out the field to get the cows in for milking. There's something very relaxing, something that contributes hugely, I think, to your well-being mentally and physically as well. A little bit different in the winter when it's pouring down with rain and stuff, and the cattle are in. It becomes different. So yeah, no. If I haven't had the other commitments that I have, then yeah, you know, I wouldn't think twice about milking again. But no, I love my Herefords, I have to say, but I also do like the dairy side of things as well. But no, I think I'll stick to the Herefords, I think.
Royal Welsh in a couple of weeks. You're excited about it? Are you heading there?
Yeah, I'll be going up probably just Monday, I think, at the moment.
What do you love about the Royal Welsh?
Yeah, I do love the Royal Welsh. It brings everybody together, doesn't it? You know, and it not only, well, I think they've got it right over the years, and I hope they can continue to do so. They've got the balance right there for the farming community, the livestock, the machinery and everything, of course, the events that are on there. They've also been able to bring people there who are not from a farming community, and that gives an opportunity to showcase the good of the farming community as well then. And they've been able to get that balance right over the years. Various events with the young farmers on there as well and everything. So it is a community, really, those 4 days, and they need to continue to do that because it's hugely, hugely important. So I'm a big supporter of the Royal Welsh and a big fan of the Royal Welsh here, and I tend to go every year. I'm not there sort of Bellaria. I'm not there sort of, you know, usually. When I was YFC President of Wales, I was there for the 4 days. Yeah, I was there because I would stay up there.
Gosh,
and then
that's
I would
full on.
Yeah, it was, you know, you'd help steward this and that and referee the YFC Sems.
Well, for so many part of the rural community,
it is.
It's just a part of the farming calendar.
It's very similar to like the YFC in one sense. The YFC has something for everybody, even if you're not from a farming community, and that's what the Royal Welsh has. It has something for everybody, and it's had that balance right and still has, and I hope it continues to do that because it is hugely, hugely important, I think.
And one final question, I can't interview you without asking, who do you think is going to win the Rugby World Cup?
Oh, I think it's going to be tough for us here in Wales. But you never know. You know, if somebody can get Wales on song for the World Cup, it'll be Gatland for sure. So We're going to do better in the World Cup than some people think we are, I believe. Whether we are going to go on to win it, we should have won it in 2011. If we'd have beaten France and gone to the final, we would have won that. I have no doubt, because we were a good side back then. And New Zealand were under pressure in that final because of their home final. And I think we would have beaten them. I really do believe that. But I think it's going to be difficult to see past France, I think. Yeah, they're playing well. They're home as well. The only thing maybe, will the pressure of that home World Cup be
too much for them?
Too much for them, maybe. Bel Aria, I wouldn't write off Ireland, even though that, I don't know, France have beaten them, the French sides have beaten them in the European Cup and stuff, and may have dented their confidence a bit. I don't know. And obviously, you never write off South Africa and Australia, South Africa and New Zealand.
Sitting on the fence here a bit.
I am sitting on the fence, but I am going to go. I am going to go for France.
Okay.
I am. I'm going to go for France, I think. That home advantage will just be enough, as long as they can deal with the pressure of it. But it's going to be a great World Cup, there's no doubt about that.
Nigel Owens, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was Nigel Owens there. It'll be really interesting, Alex, to see whether those predictions actually happen.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll all be watching closely. And obviously, there's lots of ties between the farming industry and rugby. So we've got some great guests coming up on the next few episodes of the Farmer's Guardian podcast. We'll be taking a look at farm safety, talking about dung beetles, and of course it's Farm 24 coming up soon as well.
Dung beetles, that'll be an interesting one, definitely. But also Farm 24, we want everyone to get involved in the campaign and spread the message about our fantastic industry.
Yes, and you can download your pledge online and take a photo or a video of yourself on farm backing the campaign. And you might have noticed we've had a name change here. We're now the Farmer's Guardian podcast, so make sure you're searching for us on all your favourite podcast platforms. But that's it for this week's episode of the Farmer's Guardian podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye for now.